So instead of talking about the composer for this next one, I'll actually begin by talking about the poet, because she's quite interesting. Mary Oliver was an American poet who in 2007 was declared the country's best-selling poet. Her work is inspired by nature rather than the human world. When she was young, she spent much of her time outside. As she says, it was available to her. It was right there. And she felt those first important connections, those first experiences of her life being made with the natural world rather than with the social world. She was an avid walker and usually pursued poetic inspiration from nature on foot. A good walk for her was a random ramble where she finally just stopped and wrote. She once found herself walking in the woods without a pen and later hid pencils in the trees so she wouldn't get caught out again. The Harvard Review described her work as an antidote to inattention. She is a poet of wisdom and generosity whose vision allows us to look intimately at a world not of our making. She's the perfect poet to be set by Lori Laitman, about whom the Journal of Singing wrote, "It is difficult to think of anyone before the public today who equals her exceptional gifts for embracing a poetic text and giving it new and deeper life through music." This pairing of words that are inspired by and personify the natural world and music that effortlessly highlights the meaning and feeling of said poetry is an interesting contrast to the Rake's Progress, which is all about human nature. In Stravinsky's 1953 opera, with libretto by the British poet W.H. Auden, the character Tom Rakewell allows himself to be seduced into a life of debauchery by the devil, a.k.a. Nick Shadow. He's lured away from his true love, and true love, that is her name, by the promise of easy comfort. The opera ends with an epilogue in which each of the characters gives a moral drawn from their scenes in the opera and then come together to deliver the final joint moral. For idle hands and hearts and minds, the devil finds a work to do. In this aria, No Word from Tom, Anne weighs her options. She wants to go to Tom and believes she can help him and change him. Her true love for Tom and her belief in her ability to reform him overcome her fear of the unknown and her concern for leaving her elderly father alone. So we have some very contrasting works here. The Sunflowers, sung by Darren, followed by No Word from Tom with Tricia as Anne Truelove.
Their joyous minds creak like sheep moss. Oh, on a colder heart. My father, can I desert him and his devotion for a love who has deserted me?
And we're back to mezzos. Rossini was an extremely prolific composer of opera. Relatively early in his career, he wrote 27 operas in 7 years, many at very short notice. For example, for the opera La Cenerentola in 1817, he had just over 3 weeks to write the music before the premiere. Because he was so busy writing operas, he tended to follow a formulaic structure that became known as the Code Rossini. Furthermore, he was not above borrowing from himself, recycling overtures and arias between operas. Of the 26 numbers of Eduardo e Cristina, 19 were lifted from previous works. Audience members at the premiere jokingly asked why the libretto had been changed since the last performance. When the publisher Ricordi issued a complete edition of Rossini's works in the 1850s, he was quite upset, saying, "The same pieces will be found several times." I thought I had the right to remove from my fiascos those pieces which seemed best to rescue them from shipwreck. Fiascos seemed to be good and dead, and now look, they've resuscitated them all. The last opera role he wrote using a castrato was Aureliano in Palmyra in 1814. Changing operatic tastes meant that it was becoming the norm at this point to use contralto or mezzo voices. After this point, we see that many of Rossini's heroines are written for the mezzo voice, and although they are spunky and interesting, they are not witches, boys, or overly opinionated females. Rosina, in The Barber of Seville, is independent and clever. In the aria Una voce poco fa, she vows to set 100 traps for anyone looking to control her. When necessary, she can be a viper. Cenerentola, or Cinderella, in La Cenerentola, exemplifies her inherent goodness when she refuses to treat her family badly, despite their poor treatment of her. At the end of the opera, she has everything she could possibly desire, and all she wants is to share her joy with everyone around her. No more sadness. And so we have our lovely mezzos, Brianna as Rosina, and Darren as La Cenerentola.
Una voce poco fa qui nel cor mi risuonò, il mio cor ferito è già.
Ma rojo ca
Tosti's life is a rags-to-riches story. Although he was an enormously talented musician and composer, in his early life, he was so poor he went weeks at a time living on nothing but oranges and stale bread. Fortunately, his path crossed with a composer who introduced him to the Princess Margherita, who later became Queen of Italy. She was so impressed with him that she employed him for the court. Later, he traveled to England, where he was a staple in all fashionable drawing rooms, and he then became singing master to the royal family. In 1885, he was the most popular composer of songs in England. In 1908, he was knighted by his good friend, King Edward VII. Even though he never composed opera, he wrote beautifully for the voice in both Italian and English. Has anyone here read A Mixture of Frailties by Robertson Davies? It was about to be like, just me? No. Thank you. A Mixture of Frailties from the Salterton Trilogy by Robertson Davies was published in 1958. The main characters have been charged by their dead mother to fund a young woman's artistic education in Europe with her millions, which they cannot access until they have a son. They must quickly find a suitable, talented young woman in their small town, and they discover Monica when she sings Tosti's Goodbye at the mother's funeral. Every time one of the characters mentions the song, they refer to it as that old chestnut. It must have been heard quite a bit between 1881 and 1958. I must say that in years of playing for singers, this is my first encounter with it, and I'm glad we're able to revisit it now. In the novel, Monica goes on to have a life-altering time in England where she hones her vocal skills and becomes part of a newly written opera. The composer character is loosely based on Peter Warlock, whose family were family friends of the author. Now, you may ask, how is this novel connected with our afternoon? Well, not really at all. But aside from being a good read, this book illustrates for us the importance of support and opportunity for developing artists. We are very grateful for the opportunity this organization gives to young artists to perform for a generous audience and to be supported during their studies. And so now, goodbye.
The swallows. crows are making them ready to fly, whirling out on a windy sky. Goodbye, summer, goodbye, 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 summer, goodbye. Hush, a call from the far away. Listen and learn, it seems to say. All the tomorrows shall be as today. All the tomorrows shall be as today. The cord is frayed, the cruise is dry, the link must break, and the lamp must die. Goodbye to hope, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye to hope, goodbye. We waiting for, oh my heart, kiss me straight on the brows and part again, again, my heart, what are we waiting for? You and I, a pleading look, a stifled cry.
Ladies and gentlemen, all I can say is
that, once again, I'm overwhelmed by the absolute quality of the singing, by the music, by the fact that opera is in really good hands in this new generation. I personally thank each one of you for what you did. You were terrific. And then, of course, there was the orchestra. I sat here, especially during Stravinsky. How can anybody do that? You know, there's the singing that's going on, and it's fantastic. You know, I'm distracted by the intricacies and complexities and amazing things that Sarah Bowker is doing with the piano. It's just absolutely amazing. So, just want to say, give them another big round of applause. We will have a 10-minute intermission, and then... I wish we could say we could go on with another half of a recital like this. But unfortunately, it will be a business meeting. And if any of you are members, please stay. If any of you wish to become members, please see Alice Kirk. Those of us who are members of the Guild will reassemble in about 10 minutes.